comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend to the friendless, odor to the odorless, calling lame radio to rise and talk. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Ian Punnett. We all know the symptoms of a vampire attack, as if yours has just flown out the window on the wings of a bat. You have no energy. You feel faint. You want to pass out. You might. You might find yourself inexplicably sleepy for days, listless, depressed. It's like your body chemistry is all wrong. One minute you were joyful and self-confident, but then, after an encounter with somebody you thought was a friend or even a loved one, your life is all upside down. Being around sunshine and people of the light holds no interest for you. Shadows seem safer. Sleep during the day, stay up at night. That becomes the cure for what ails you. No one will bother you then. Your skin loses its color. You seem pale, both inside and out, almost like you're becoming physically translucent. You feel as if you cannot generate enough of your own energy to replenish the life force that has been sucked from you. You might even find yourself getting very sick, and you might not even be the kind of person who gets sick. Racing a fever, no interest in food, or maybe just eating carbs and sugars to compensate, but nothing healthy, not your normal diet. Food loses its flavor for you, or you lose its your appetite for it. It's just too hard to tell. But what you do know is this pattern repeats itself every time you encounter this person, maybe even the last person you would ever suspect of being a vampire. Not a fang-sporting, cape-wearing immortal, but an entity just as deadly to your soul. A psychic vampire. The same symptoms, the same effect, slightly, and I emphasize slightly, different cause. What is a psychic vampire? What are they like? What do they want? How do you spot one in your life? How do you protect yourself against them? And how can you recover from both the mental and the physical symptoms of psychic vampirism? Our guest next hour believes psychic vampires are everywhere. And she ought to know. She's been tracking them for years. Dr. Judith Orloff, medical intuitive, famed energy psychiatrist, and best-selling author. Dr. Judith Orloff, the Van Helsing to psychic vampires. Next hour on Coast to Coast. Crypto news. Your emails, and a rare occurrence on this show. Next, you are C2C with Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, here's how it looks. Coming up, we'll be joined by Dr. Ronnie Milioni. We'll tell you more about the TAPS team, what he has been working on, how that's perfect for this Halloween weekend. Also, along with Dr. Judith Orloff coming up next hour, we will have a bonus hour tonight. Here's the play. We'll do some crypto news here, some email, Dr. Ronnie Milioni, and then Dr. Judith Orloff. And then after that, we'll have 1 hour at the very end of the show because of daylight savings time. So we'll be picking up an extra hour by falling back tonight. That means a bonus hour of Coast to Coast tonight. We will have that be entirely open lines at the end of the show. You will take us anywhere you want to go coming up at the end of the show. And then that hour will likely disappear from the archives because it's really just an hour to cover for the daylight savings time thing. I think if maybe on podcasting, they might carry it. I don't know, but there's a good chance you will only hear this hour once, and then that'll be it. It'll be an entirely unarchived hour at the end of the show. In fact, if you're listening to this on a repeat sometime next week or something, you won't hear it at all. So enjoy it if you're up. We'll be glad to have your phone calls. Lots of things to report. Hurricane Beta is gaining strength as it's heading into Nicaragua and Honduras. It looks like it's going to be getting somewhere up to a Category 2, maybe even a 3 in the next 24 hours before making serious landfall in populated areas. Of course, we'll be keeping an eye on that. But it's, remember, just even the beginning of the last month of hurricane season goes on until November 30th, and we're already at Beta. And I'm not one that jumps at an opportunity to talk about, you know, the apocalypse or something. But if we get around like Hurricane Lambda or something, we get that many before the end of November, it's gonna be a mind changer, maybe, for a lot of people. I know I'll take a look at it. A supernova could be the quick and dirty explanation for what may have happened to early North American culture. That, according to a nuclear scientist, Richard Firestone, at the Clovis in the Southeast Conference. This was a scientific conference, and they talked about how comets blasted early Americans. Firestone said that based on his discovery of material at various sites, he estimates that comets struck the solar system during the Clovis period, which was roughly 13,000 years ago. These comets would have hit the Earth at 1,000 kilometers an hour, he said, obliterating many life forms and causing mutations in others. It's a little controversial, but they're investigating it. Thousands of flaming rocks heading at 1,000 kilometers an hour toward Earth. It kind of puts a little perspective even on our hurricane season this year. Iran says that it has no intention of attacking Israel, despite a call by its president to have Israel wiped off the map. Essentially, they're saying, we were just kidding or something. Iran's foreign minister said Tehran respected the UN charter and never used or threatened to use force. An Iranian TV channel broadcast the remark for the first time on Saturday, saying reaction to it was coordinated by Israel in a plot against Iran. But just in case anybody objects to that comment, they were kidding about that too. That's how it's going to work. Al Jazeera, the Arab news service, growing by leaps and bounds worldwide, reports WorldNetDaily.com, threatening and spreading to reach into the Western world, has a new name for suicide bombings. Apparently, according to WorldNetDaily, on Al Jazeera, they are now referring to suicide bombings as paradise operations. An accredited Arabic language translator spied the new phrase in the current issue of the Arabic language news site, paradise operations, no longer suicide bombings. Not every news site is right. Newsmax.com on Friday put out a bulletin alert of breaking news from Newsmax to the media and their subscribers, saying that Lewis Scooter Libby would likely avoid perjury charges in the LeakGate case. That, according to a private source for Newsmax.com, just about 5 minutes before he was charged with perjury. They said he wouldn't be. But that sometimes happens. And this case against Scooter Libby, and I don't feel like I know him really well enough to call him Scooter, so I thought I'll stop him. Just call it Lewis Libby. This case against him was at least done in secrecy. You got to love the fact that there weren't any leaks. The lawyer for Vice President Dick Cheney's former top aide, though, is outlining a possible criminal defense that is a time-honored tradition in Washington scandals. a busy official immersed in important duties cannot reasonably be expected to remember details of long ago conversations. That apparently is the position being taken by Lewis Libby's attorney, arguing that he just forgot those key details. And so if we're just going to get this straight, he was too busy to remember the real story, but he was just had enough time to come up with details of a false one. Is that where we are with this? I don't know. If that doesn't work, maybe they can go with he was just kidding. And finally, this story sent in by Rod, a story from Seoul, South Korea. Maybe you heard police in Seoul have been battling an invasion of wild boars that have come down from the mountains into densely populated areas in and around Seoul, foraging for food and drink before the onset of winter. Friday, one turned up at an apartment complex east of Seoul. Police failed to catch it after a 90-minute chase. These wild boars, of course, are wild piggies, but they're huge. Earlier this week, about 200 tourists were evacuated from a palace in central Seoul after a wild boar was spotted on the grounds and hunters and police gave chase. Last week, a wild boar was spotted near a luxury hotel. Police, hunters, and dogs chased the animal to the banks of the Han River. One wild boar had broken into a restaurant where it was trampling on cases of beer, drinking all of the beer it could get a hold of. It would knock the bottles over, break the bottles, and then drink all the beer. And according to one reporter on the scene, and I believe this translates well, they haven't confirmed, in fact, that that wild boar, in fact, did go wee, wee, wee all the way home. That's all we know. Some email from you all. Good luck to George. He has started a website called Zirf, Z-I-R-F, Zirf.net. Zirf as in surf, but with a Z. And he likes the show a lot. If you're going to be Zirfing the net tonight, go to coasttocoastam.com and take a peek at the gallery of new weird photos, things that people have done to my face, plus the great field contributions that come in from you all at coasttocoastam.com. But the final gallery is installed. So you can see the first two galleries, amazingly creative, boundlessly creative work. But this will be our last one. So I hope you enjoy it. These are all basically Halloween costumes of one type or another. Some of them historic, some of them spooky, all of them very good. And that thing with Hercules, the scariest thing about that picture, if you scroll down and you look at my face imposed on, is it Kenneth Sorbo's head? Is actually, I had hair like that for many, many years. And the photos to prove it. And it looked remarkably like my haircut from my junior prom. Okay. Glenn writes in, Punnett, it is no coincidence that you are beardless. RFIDs are disrupting the balance of pores on your face. Ferret blood or no, your chin will never yield crop. Believe me, I know. I am in tune with many a mandible. I have dined with the Burmese onion experts. I bleed carpet. I am the same, the very same. Dad blasted human creature that ripped the golden nipple from the chest of the Cyclops. I am the original otter daddy. Sun-baked and crispy as all get-out, cold as a frozen turtle I be, and proud as an engorged cognac-sipping emu. Take heed, Punnett. Listen well, or find yourself between a rock and a hard place, between a burnt turnip and that which be greenish. A cigarette a day never killed a plastic chef. If you take nothing else from this message, ask yourself what the dubious tar-swinging, budgie-rustling pirates of Utile Point have been asking each other since the mid-1370s. What are ye afeard of? Respectfully, Glenn, wielder of the whole wheat javelin. Thank you, Glenn. Be careful with that. You could put somebody's eye out. Tabitha writes, blessed are those who have a sense of humor and can take a joke. Remember the story of a great saint who went out on a cold, stormy night to help a sick person. On the way home, the horse stumbled and her carriage overturned, landing her in a big cold puddle. She turned to God and said, "Is this the way you treat your friends?" And God replied, "Yes." Hi, Ian, writes Tony, was wondering, if a tree fell in the forest and there was no one around, would the other trees laugh? The answer to that is also yes. In listening to your program about monsters last week, you said you had always believed that monsters did not have souls. You were also curious if serial killers have souls. I thought about that, and I believe that serial killers do have a soul. Even a mad soul is a soul. Chris in Woodinville. You may be right on that, Chris, but I still wonder whether it's possible that that's when people become serial killers, is when they lose even a mad soul. Rose writes, I was listening to the program and your comments on the lights over Lake Michigan. It rang a bell. I was telling you my UFO story from my youth when I had hair back, like in that picture on the gallery number 3. I live in Wisconsin, just a few blocks from Lake Michigan. Many summer nights, we sit in our backyard, light a fire, and watch the skies. My backyard is facing west, so we mostly watch planes and fast walkers heading east to west. Many times, we cannot explain the lights we see. Believe me, I can tell the difference between an airplane, a fast walker, or a shooting star. I have seen triangular lights many times as they go over our house toward the lake. They seem to be steady, but once they get over the lake, they seem to be veering sharply toward Canada. I also see strange vehicles in the sky during the day, but not as often. The strangest was 3 military-style planes heading east and a silverish ball heading straight for them from the east headed west. As the silver ball got close, it pulled up and disappeared. Shortly after the military planes split and turned around toward Canada, it didn't take long and all the planes were out of sight. I am wondering why there is so much activity over the lake or the area surrounding it. Bud writes, Ian, this will shock you. In August, I went to Canada and met a soldier working in our army. I speak quite a few languages. I got to talking to him about the Mideast, and he made a very strange comment. In our army, any soldier who dies who has no relations and nobody knows, his body is frozen and sent to Germany. There are hundreds of frozen bodies there, he said. And this was a very interesting story. I thank Ryan, who lives in an apartment building built in the 1850s. It has previously been a malt house, he says, a restaurant, a hotel, a crack house, and now an apartment building in Albany, New York. There's a history of paranormal activity here, he says. And ghost sightings occur almost daily. They aren't malevolent, but they do let you know when they're not happy with you by throwing things in their displeasure. They've informed the landlord of an impending death of a tenant 2 weeks in advance. The former maintenance man from almost 100 years ago is routinely seen on the fourth and fifth floors. That's particularly amazing because in an apartment building where I used to live, of course, you didn't even see the living maintenance man. I would have settled for, you know, a dead maintenance ghost coming in and fixing the plumbing. In any particular apartment, I've seen the following, writes Ryan. Aluminum cans rolling across the floor, shower curtains being drawn, footsteps in the walk-in closet, wall switches turning off and on, hiding of various objects, and not to mention the fact that my cat seems to track things almost incessantly, at times cowering in the corner or trying to escape through the door. What's more is that when Coast to Coast is on, ghosts or paranormal activity are mentioned, there tends to be attention taken by the ghosts. My cat goes ballistic while the show is on regarding ghosts or paranormal events. Well, be warned, Ryan. Keep an eye on your cat tonight. If not the subject of psychic vampirism coming up next hour, then certainly our first guest will get your cat going and the ghosts flipping switches and walking around. You might even be ready to duck. We'll talk with Dr. Ronnie Milioni of TAPS. He designs, tests, and researches new technologies for tools to help paranormal researchers do their work to collect, inspect, observe, and save evidence of ghosts. We'll get the latest on that next on Coast to Coast AM. If you want to find out more about Dr. Ronnie Milioni, then you can always link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. While you're there tonight, enjoy the special photos of the gallery number 3, the Halloween edition. But also, sign up for the After Dark newsletter, new edition, always good, very well written, always a good column from George. And then on top of that, just terrific news pieces that you might have not gotten enough of or maybe have missed entirely on Coast to Coast. And you can find that at coasttocoastam.com. Start there. And while you're there, too, take a look at next hour's guest, a medical intuitive, somebody who works at a very high level, somebody who is extremely well known, taken very seriously in the professional psychiatric community, and yet uses remote viewing techniques and is a proponent that psychic vampires exist, they are in our midst, and they need to be taken very seriously. It may be at the root of your problems. Coming up next hour, Dr. Ronnie Milioni next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Ronnie Milioni is the research and development manager for TAPS. He designs, tests, and researches new technologies for paranormal researchers to collect and inspect and possibly even save evidence. And on this Halloween weekend, we couldn't think of any better guest. He's also an engineering manager for a major Department of Defense manufacturer. They develop communications and navigation and other systems. Good evening, Dr. Milioni.
Good evening, Ian. How are you?
Good. As an assistant adjunct professor at St. John's University, how does the rest of your faculty look at your ghost work?
They stay far away from me.
A candid answer.
Yeah. I bring basically the sciences of, let's say, computer science and some of the other sciences. Sometimes I do some physics teaching last minute when they need a substitute. And that's what gets my ideas going. And I go, wow, this is great. If we could deploy these different tactics into some of this tools, this might work out for the community, such as, you know, the paranormal community.
Well, let's talk about the latest, because, you know, we've had a few conversations over the years about people who swear they have come up with some sort of foolproof device, or they're going to have proof here in just a matter of weeks, and somehow it doesn't usually pan out. What are you working on?
The latest thing that I'm working on, which is going to be pretty exciting, is most paranormal people have EMF detectors, you know, electromagnetic detection systems. What I'm working on is kind of a graduation from that point. It's more of a EMF array system with data logging. So what that means is you can have a cluster or a bunch of these EMF detectors that'll work as one unified system. And if an entity or a spirit or something that's really causing some, what we call as spikes, in the EMM world, it's going to record and capture in real time as this entity moves through, let's call it, the medium.
Well, okay, I get what you're saying. I mean, I understand the words. Let's talk about that in practical purposes. I read an email from somebody who talks about living in a haunted apartment building where, you know, there's this spirit of a 100-year-old janitor or a janitor from 100 years ago that appears on the fourth and fifth floor. And things are happening routinely, almost poltergeist-like kind of pranks being pulled. What would something that you've been working on, how could that be useful for that person?
There you go. That's a good example. What happens when these investigators are out there, and myself being part of the TAPS team and going on some of these investigations, it's always a solo or one type of investigation concept. In other words, you have an instrument in your hand and you're just trying to, you're going around a room and you're looking for, you know, specific, oh, I got a spike in this corner and it's kind of weak and I got a spike in that corner. You're lacking the other, you know, total coverage. So what I'm trying to figure out is, how do we cover a whole entire perimeter at the same time and create what they call is more like a three-dimensional view of if there's any activity? So now we have, let's say, we have four of these devices in one room, four EMF systems in one room, working in uniform. Now, if the entity or, say, the suspicion is in one corner, as this thing moves, it's going to target EMF detector number two.
And then the thought is here that, just back up for a second, so the thought is if this entity is moving, if, you know, you get a spike in this corner over here and you get a spike in that corner over there, that in the meantime it might have moved around. And it, so this way you can have a whole, almost like a radar of the whole room, that wherever it goes, you'll be able to see where it's going.
Exactly. And that's the whole trick about that. If you data capture that in real time and you could bring it to, let's say, you send that data to a existing laptop at the control station or the command center, and you can actually almost try to draw it a kind of a path, like an orbital path of this entity, then you could really get a visualization and go, all right, there is definitely some, you know, real evidence here. So A, we captured the evidence. B, we have a computer model of what's going on, and now it could really give us some more, bring in some more iron, in other words, more additional tools into, if we could really focus in some more of the area.
All right. Well, you said, on some of these expeditions already. What's the best case you've seen so far for a ghost in your experience?
When we were doing an investigation at the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, that place is built in the 1800s, and there's been so many reports of situations. And what's interesting also is that we thought we had something good one night while we were there, but apparently, because of the lack of the current technology that I'm trying to develop, so one of the other members got a significant energy, or in other words, he thought it was a location-centric, we call it, but there was nothing to record or capture that. Now, this is beyond video, beyond infrared video or thermal imaging video that we also do. So we couldn't go back. We couldn't reproduce it. The entity, or so the suspicion at that point wasn't even around anymore. So it kind of just went out down by the wayside. But according to his experience, and this is based on his experience now, that there was something significant, but didn't have the data at that point to have in storage. Without having that storage, it just goes away.
Okay, but
nobody can't review it.
So what have you seen? Have you ever seen anything?
Now, myself personally,
yeah,
I haven't seen with my own organic sensors and even with some of my equipment. I have not seen personally. I just think that entity says, oh, here comes the Detective Columbo, and we need to avoid him.
Why would they want to? Well, I mean, what would be the purpose if they have the ability to move in and out at will? Why would they care? I mean, I could understand it if at some point you actually or anybody else in the TAPS team is able to come up with some sort of device that actually catches a ghost or could, you know, some way forcibly make a ghost that, according to some accounts, might be, you know, a life force caught between first death and second death. You can make somebody pass on. I mean, I could understand that if that was already developed, but if it's not, what do they care?
Yeah, that's true. That's a real good point. I mean, it's something that in the back of our minds, we always think about what kind of intelligence that particular entity is coming to a point of almost like a rational, logical approach to us on the opposite side. You know, it's an intelligent haunting where it definitely wants to avoid being caught, or maybe it just basically doesn't want to be known, where it might be afraid that we can kind of push it off to the next, you know, trans dimension, let's say.
Well, I just mean, I wonder, you know, I'm not saying you are a victim of this or guilty of this, but I think that some paranormal people will talk about that, and they'll talk about how they believe that ghosts disappear once they show up. And I think, isn't that kind of like the height of arrogance, that somehow the ghosts are scared of us? And that's not my impression of ghosts. I mean, I only have experienced one thing with a ghost, but I didn't feel in control at all in the situation.
Another theory that I think about is your energy level in, well, let's call it our present dimension. In other words, what right. you and I live right now, certain entities out there senses your energy output, because everyone has a different energy output, especially electromagnetic output of your body.
Right.
And depending on how concentration focus that your energy may be out, that they could probably pick up, and I'm saying they may pick up and sense that the energy level is really strong here, and they might sense a fear or discomfort, and it doesn't allow it to communicate with you. Because under thermal imaging, you could see tremendous energy level differences between different human beings, especially one that's really like under stress, or
sure.
it's really under major concentration, you know, consciously. And you could see the imaging mapping. It's just incredible the amount of energy that different people put out. So that might have a direct effect to what's happening on the other side, where they just sense that, well, this guy's really really psyched up, or he's really keen, and I'm out of here.
Well, so do you suspect then that they are doing a kind of thermal imaging of us? And if, because we can't, how could we do a thermal imaging of them?
That's all, that all relates to the basic laws of physics called the, you know, electromagnetic radiation spectrum.
Right.
What's interesting about that is, depending on where they're working at, now this is my theory, now if they're working at some areas that's basically maybe outside, of course, our visible spectrum, they might be working, let's say, high up in the infrared or ultraviolet spectrum, they could basically, at that point there, get some kind of like window into our area and say, and decide, you know, is it good or is it not good at that point to do something?
I don't know that I'm following you. Help me on that. That you think that they, I'm not sure I understood what you mean by that.
Well, they definitely have to work at some electromagnetic spectrum, and
okay.
we still can't figure out where they actually, these energies are hanging around. Do they move up and down the spectrum at will?
Yep.
Beyond our visible spectrum, we can't communicate human-wise without using special other instrumentation. So once you and I are outside our visible spectrum, I can't see infrared, I can't see ultraviolet, neither is anyone else on the planet. Now, these things, if they move up and down the spectrum, they could kind of hide at that moment in time. So if they're hiding or working in the ultraviolet, and of course we don't see an ultraviolet, they're invisible to us, but they could see us. They could, you know, at any moment switch around in that spectrum. So the thing that's to think about is, if we have a wide spectrum of tools, that works way across this electromagnetic radiation scheme that we may be able to lock in and say, okay, at this particular moment of time, they're working at this frequency. Let's communicate with them.
Okay. As the research and development manager for TAPS, why do you think we don't have more videos of ghosts?
And sometimes the amount of footage and the hours that certain groups besides ourselves that are running. Now, don't forget, depending on what type of technology the video is running, if we're running straight, this straight visual video that's within the visual spectrum, we're not going to see something that's going to be outside the band. So we need to run.
But if we can see it with our human eye, why couldn't we be able to record it with a video?
It depends. I know what you're coming across and saying on that.
Well, that makes one of us. I just wonder about it. I don't have an answer, but I've always been curious as people have said, oh, I saw it, but it didn't appear on the video. And I think, well, how does that happen, that something we can see with our eye, not with our mind's eye, but we feel like we sense actually with one of our, as you said earlier, described it as an organic sense, as right. We can see it, why can't it be recorded?
Now, let's take this on the other side. Suppose they have a way to come in, and we see it with our eyes. In other words, they're within our same spectrum. But there's a way where on the recording side of that same instance, the camera is rolling, they have a way where it doesn't get recorded through the recording system. In other words, they happen to erase it at the same time they're appearing. Just think about that for a second.
Yeah.
So we see it at that instance in time, boom, there's Mr. Ghosty Ghosty. At the same time, the camera's running, but then when you go back for playback, zero. It's like there's nothing there.
Okay.
Do they have a creative way of where they change the magnetic flux, you know, on it? Because we're going from analog to digital. Even if you're running digital cameras, they have a way to change the flux where there's no data in the on the recording at all.
The flux capacitor, as it were.
Exactly.
Okay. One other question, because I know you do work for a major Department of Defense manufacturer.
Yes.
Would there ever be a military application for this technology that you're working on now?
Absolutely. It's very parallel in some of the techniques and technologies that's used in the paranormal business that the military is absolutely experimenting on their end. In other words, electromagnetic frequencies, for example, is very, very critical to our government to figure out different ways where we can communicate to, let's say, the soldiers, or what we call the shooter at the edge, where the enemy out there doesn't pick up and doesn't interpret. Once we start to radiate, in other words, we're giving off energy, you're letting your location known. Same thing with an entity. The entity gives off its location by giving off enough energy at a concentrated area, and we're right there doing a sweep. Okay, we have some activity there. So the technologies that are presently being developed and researched for the military are very critical in as far as what we could do to hide or stealth ourselves.
I know you're working on these new devices for the TAPS team and for paranormal researchers everywhere. Do you believe that in my lifetime, you or somebody like you will be able to develop some technology that could capture a ghost?
I think the technology is out there. It's just a matter of how do we put it all together as one node or one union of technology to get it. What I was saying about earlier about this EMF cluster, you know, array. These are areas that are definitely give us data back in real time and really, you know, scope out and see, okay, yes, there is something here. No, there isn't.
Okay.
A lot of these paranormal people, what happens, too, if they're on an investigation, they might just walk right in and just start doing, you know, conducting research. You know, let's just go sweep this room.
Right.
Yeah, you got to do a baseline analysis first. Make sure look where there's natural electromagnetic noise, what we call the EMF noise floor of the place under a suspicion. There's a whole bunch of steps to go through before. Okay, now we're ready to proceed and let's do some, you know, real paranormal investigation.
And as that technology continues to develop, I hope you continue to keep us informed, because we look forward to finding out more from you someday soon. Dr. Ronnie Milioni of the TAPS team will go coast to coast coming up next with Psychic Vampires.